But I cannot. Why can you not? Because I have been helping the thief. Hecate became very still. Without daring to look at him, Ranefer whispered, I did not know I was helping. I swear it. I did not even know gold was missing until Rek told me 2 days ago. Then I started thinking. He turned to Hecate miserably. It is those wineskins.
Wineskins?
You saw Ibni try to give me one yesterday. I carry them home. I have been doing it for months, never knowing. Do you see? Ibni is nothing but a tool in the hands of my half-brother. And so am I. Hecate's eyes looked into his, wide and comprehending. Suddenly, the first craftsman's bellow rang across the courtyard. Well, dreamers, do you mean to stand all day and gawk at one another? Get on with your solder-making. Both boys jumped to their work. For a few moments, until Sata turned back into the shop, their hands flew and their tongues were still. Then Hecate, straightening from the oven, murmured, You can tell Rek. He would not believe you meant to steal from him. Perhaps not. It makes no difference. It is not Rek, I fear. It is Gebu.
Gebu?
What would he do if you told? What would anyone do with the tool that turned on him? Look out, your mixture is melting. As Hecate bent hastily to the mold, Ranefer went on snipping and whispering with equal urgency. What would you do with a hammer that would not balance or a knife that would not cut? You would break it in anger, then get another. But if Gebu is seized for the thefts, Gebu will never be seized, only Ibni or I. Hecate thought a moment. You refused to take that wineskin yesterday. I, Ranefer gave an involuntary shiver. I'll not refuse the next one, you may be sure of it. Gebu is a devil, I tell you. I do not want to go on thieving for him, yet I must until Rek is told. Then Rek must be told. But I cannot do it. I cannot, Hecate.
Therefore what?
Therefore I want you to tell him.
I?
Hecate faced him, startled. Why not? He will believe you. Oh, you must. I beg it of you.
But I know nothing about it, how it is done, or...
I will tell you all that. There is only one way it could be done, I am sure of it.
Rapidly, Ranefer explained what he suspected about Ibni and the big washing vats. Hecate nodded slowly. I had not thought of those vats, nor has Rek, I'll wager.
For proof, Rek need only find where Ibni hides that wineskin. Some cranny in the storeroom, very likely. He must drop the gold in bit by bit, a grain at a time, because 10 days or more go by between the times I am called on to take home Gebu's little gift. Ranefer spat angrily, then with a glance toward the shop, picked up his snippers again.
It is clever, so hard to trace, Hecate said, yet I see quite well how it could be done.
You have not yet said that you will tell Rek.
I will tell him, friend.
Ranefer drew in his breath with painful relief. Thank you. I thought you would help me, but I... And you will not whisper to anyone that it came from me, because Gebu would learn of it.
I'll not mention your name. Leave everything to me. Perhaps I had best not go to Rek at all until tomorrow, since you and I have been seen talking together today.
Aye, that would be best. I'll not come near you for a few days. Sss, here comes Sata.
The boys sealed their agreement with a glance and fell busily to work. There was no chance to say more, not even another thank you, for Sata stayed near the rest of the morning. After midday break, the boys separated to different tasks, but Ranefer's head rang with the words all day. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Then, that evening as he was leaving the shop, he saw Ibni waiting with the wineskin in his hand. Ranefer stopped, aghast. He had forgotten that this was bound to happen. He would have turned back into the shop, dodged down an alley, vanished into thin air if he could, but there was no avoiding the Babylonian this time. His voice was as wheeling as ever, but there was an open threat in his eyes as he stepped in front of Ranefer and blocked his way.
"Ah, greetings to you, little one. I feared I had missed you with my little gift. You were mistaken yesterday, were you not, when you told me the message from your honored half-brother? Did you not find out you had misunderstood him? Surely he would like a little wine made from our own grapes."
"Give it to me and be gone," Ranefer said through set teeth. He snatched the wineskin and stalked by the Babylonian, taking pleasure in treading on his toe as he passed. Half-blinded by angry tears, he almost walked straight into Hecate, who was lurking in a doorway farther down the street, waiting for him. Ranefer motioned in silence toward the wineskin.
"Aye," Hecate said, "this will spoil our plan for tomorrow, won't it?"
"It spoils everything, everything. Here is the proof we need in my hand, before we even had time to make use of it. Now we will have to wait and wait and wait until he has collected more and another wineskin."
"We will wait then. 4 or 5 days will make little difference after all."
"How do we know? I do not want to wait."
"If we must, we must."
Hecate touched Ranefer's shoulder awkwardly. "Never fear, we'll catch him, as the tortoise said to the snail."
Ranefer tried to smile, but he could not help feeling that Hecate's simile had for once been unfortunately chosen. He started homeward, the hated wineskin under his arm.
When he arrived at the street of the Crooked Dog, he found Gebu in such roaring good humor that he knew the beatings, at least, were over for a while. Wenamun, Gebu's friend of the noiseless feet and drooping cloak, had been paying a call. The two were on their way down the stair as Ranefer entered the courtyard.
"Hey, it is the little messenger," bellowed Gebu as his eyes went to the wineskin.
To Wenamun, he added in an undertone,
"Though it is of small importance now, eh?" and burst into a roar of laughter.
Before Ranefer had time to wonder what he meant, he beckoned peremptorily.
"Well, well, come here, messenger. Make your delivery and receive your reward."
Ranefer approached cautiously, handed the wineskin to him, and jumped back out of range. He did not trust Gebu's rewards. This time, however, Gebu paid no attention to him. He was showing the wineskin to Wenamun with a grin.
"A gift from a friend, grown on his own vines and made by his wife's hand. Is that not touching? A pity we cannot drink it."
Ranefer did not think so. It was obvious Gebu had drunk a great deal of wine already. He started for the storeroom to see if there were anything to eat.
"Stay, do you not want the reward I promised?" Gebu shouted.
"I had that yesterday," Ranefer muttered.
"So you did, but you like this one better, I dare say."
There was a metallic clink on the pavement behind Ranefer. He whirled in astonishment and saw a copper ring coin lying there.
"Well, pick it up, pick it up. Do you think it is a scorpion? Now go buy food and eat it. I can count every rib on your back. First take this wineskin up to my..."
Gebu stopped abruptly, then grinned at Wenamun and finished,
"Nay, I will take it."
He staggered noisily up the stairs. When he was gone, Ranefer stood clutching his copper and enduring Wenamun's steady, bright-eyed gaze. It made every hair on his head prickle, and it seemed to go on forever. At last Gebu reappeared, however, singing at the top of his voice. Without taking further notice of Ranefer, the two left the courtyard and started down the street in the direction of the docks. Ranefer wasted no time in taking advantage of Gebu's sudden generosity. The moment the sound of raucous singing had faded around the corner, he slipped out of the gate and ran in the opposite direction. With luck, Ka'i the baker's boy would have a few loaves left, and he could eat his fill for once.
Chapter 5
Gebu's joviality lasted for several days, and as was usual during these periods, Ranefer fared better as to food. His stomach ceased gnawing, but his anxieties did not. He was able to show fair patience for the first day or so of waiting for the grains of gold to accumulate in Ibni's next wineskin. But after that, though he told himself it was still too early, he could not help expecting every moment to see Hecate's signal that Rek had been told and all was well. At last, on the fourth morning, close to midday, he noticed Hecate standing close beside Rek's work table, ostensibly watching the goldsmith raise a bowl, but actually whispering to him under cover of the hammered taps. Ranefer turned away quickly, terrified that someone else would notice. He need not have worried. Anxiety caused him to make so many blunders the rest of the day that the whole shop's attention was irritably focused on himself. When he reached the gold house next morning, he glanced instantly toward the big washing vats. Ibni was there the same as every other day, unconcernedly dumping a sack of raw gold into the vat. For a moment, Ranefer could not believe it. Surely, once Rek knew, he would turn Ibni out of the shop forever. Surely it was Ibni who was doing the thieving. Perhaps Rek did not know yet. Perhaps Hecate had been telling him something else yesterday. Or, Harad thought, perhaps Rek had not believed him. All day, Ranefer went about his duties mechanically, forcing himself to abide by his own decision that he and Hecate should not be seen in conversation. At last, in the late afternoon, he could bear it no longer. He watched his chance and stopped close beside Hecate on the pretext of helping him stoke an oven.
"Have you told him yet?"
"Aye, yesterday."
"I thought so."
"Why does he not do something, then?"
"I do not know. Perhaps he cannot find the wineskin."
"Did he believe you?"
"I am sure he did."
"Did you not mention my name?"
"You know I would not."
There was nothing to do but go on waiting that day, and the next, and the next. 8 days gone already, Ranefer thought as he walked homeward one evening. Yet nothing has changed at all. There must be such gold in that wineskin by now. In another day or two, Ibni will be waiting for me again, handing me the filthy thing, and I shall have to take away that proof, too, and then we must start all over and wait and wait and wait some more. I cannot do it. I cannot. I'll run away first. I'll slip away to the docks at night, that's what I'll do, and hide on a Nile boat and go wherever it takes me. Aye, but then what would I do, and how would I live? Suppose the boat was sailing south, straight to Kush, where men are barbarians and the gods are not true gods, and people speak gibberish instead of talking sensibly as Egyptians do. Suppose... A sharp collision with a puffing fat man brought Ranefer up short. Next instant, he was knocked off balance again by a group of urchins scrambling past him, to be shoved aside in their turn by workers dashing off the ferry boats they had just boarded and into the road. Blinking, Ranefer stared about him. Something was happening. People were shouting, gesturing to each other, beginning to run all in the same direction, southward, toward the palace. Confused and jostled, Ranefer was swept along by the crowd, trying in vain to catch a glimpse of the palace walls over a sea of bobbing heads. At the sound of drums up ahead and the squeals of trumpets, his curiosity drove even his anxieties from his mind. He was trying to force his way around a stubbornly motionless donkey when a hand caught his arm.
"Don't hurry, young one. You don't want to see it."
"See what? What is it?" As the crowd streamed past, Ranefer tried impatiently to free his arm, but the donkey's owner held it fast. Turning, Ranefer saw it was the old man he had met in the papyrus marsh.
"It's an execution, young one. Aye, turn back. You'll see enough killing before you're as old as I."
Ranefer squinted again toward the palace walls, partially visible beyond the palm-fringed garden of a nobleman's villa. The drums were pounding louder, as if to drown out a faint but spine-chilling screaming. The small, struggling figure of a man was being hoisted by one roped foot up the palace wall, to be fastened halfway to the top and left dangling, head downward. Another followed.
"Who are they, ancient?"
Ranefer asked,
What have they done?
They are tomb robbers, young one. They broke into the places of silence. They stole away the dead pharaoh's treasures and sold them in the marketplace. Aye, they deserve what they get, but you don't need to watch it.
Tomb robbers.
Shivering, Ranefer stared at the distant copper-brown figures writhing against the white wall. Because of these wicked ones and their thievery, the Ba of some long-dead pharaoh was now starving and destitute in the land of the West, stripped of the magical protection of his jeweled amulets, robbed of the food and gold and furniture and weapons placed in his tomb to sustain him in luxury for his 3,000 years of paradise. If the wicked ones had harmed his mummy, then even his Ba was dead. For a man's soul could not live if his former body were destroyed. Murder of the soul was a terrible, unnatural crime, hideous to think about. His flesh crawling, Ranefer hastily turned his back, pulling away from the ancient.
You are right. I don't want to see it. Let me go, old one.
You have wisdom as well as youth, a most unusual combination.
The old man released him, chuckling, and Ranefer started back along the street. Such cheerfulness grated on him today. The ancient followed, however, giving a tug on his donkey's lead rope.
Come along, my little lotus. Quicken your hoofbeats. It is not every day we may walk with one so young and wise. Though indeed, I believe he is trying to run away from us.
Nay, I am not.
Ranefer slowed his pace, ashamed of his surliness. To make amends, he patted the donkey's coarse-haired, fuzzy head.
I see you have sold your papyrus, he added, nodding toward the empty pack baskets.
Aye, at the sailmakers. They pay little, but it is enough for Lotus and me. Today was a good day. My baskets near burst under the load.
The old man cackled happily, digging 6 copper ring coins out of his skimpy sash and exhibiting them to Ranefer.
I shall have cakes with my lentils tonight and sleep sound on my mat.
He whirled the rings on his fingertip, then tucked them away, patting his sash complacently.
Where do you live?
Ranefer asked.
Yonder, where the fields of the flower growers end and the desert begins.
The ancient pointed a thin finger westward.
The land there is waterless, but free to anyone. I built me a little house out of bricks I made with my own hands. Aye, every brick, he repeated, as Ranefer looked at him with sudden interest. I had no straw to put in them, but they will last my life and my old donkeys. We are happy here, Lotus and I.
And the donkey? Is there pasture for him?
Not a blade, not a twig, young one. But he has learned to like papyrus.
The ancient gave his high-pitched chuckle, his one eye bright as enamel under the dark line of coal painted on the upper lid.
Also, I buy him a handful of grain when I have an extra copper. He does not ask much.
Affectionately, he pulled the little beast's ear, then nodded toward a small street they were approaching.
I leave you here. Farewell, young and wise one. May I never see you hanging from the palace walls.
Cackling cheerfully, he turned off down the crooked lane, and the old donkey plodded behind him. Ranefer watched until the shadow swallowed them, then walked on through the dusk-filled streets, in which an occasional torch bloomed now over doorway or gate.
He is happy, the boy thought. He eats. He sleeps in a house he made himself. He has coppers in his sash. Why could I not go in the early mornings to the marshes, cut papyrus and sell it to the sailmakers, then be Rex's apprentice the rest of the day? Holy Mother Mutt, why not? I too could live on the edge of the desert near my father's tomb. I could make bricks for a house. I could...
He turned a last corner and stopped, his excited daydreams fading. There was the familiar gate. The ugly street, reality.
I cannot do all that, he thought. I do not even have a donkey to carry the papyrus, and besides, there is Gebu. I must go on waiting.
Next morning, there was a stranger in Ibni's place at the vats. To Ranefer, it was as if the sun had come out at last after weeks of gloomy night. The sky was radiant, the air on his cheeks miraculously caressing. Even the ovens seemed things of beauty, and every worker in the shop a skilled and witty fellow. He flew about his tasks, buoyant with triumph and overflowing with energy. Rek watched him speed back and forth between shop and courtyard, and finally stopped him, smiling. "You'll not last the day if you keep up this pace. What has got into you? Do you swallow a hive of bees?" "Nay, master, it is nothing."
Ranefer did not know what to say.
"It is something, but I do not mean to pry. May the gods continue to smile on you, little one, for a change. Now, run to Abba the Potter's for me, and get the new crucible to replace that faulty one. Also, buy 5 measures of natron on your way back. Tomorrow, perhaps, you may make me a few gold leaves for Lady Hatasu's bracelet." Scarcely touching the ground in his rapture, Ranefer sped through the city of the dead to Abba's shop, and from there to the long, low shed in the marketplace where the dealers in natron and spices and incense sold their wares. He was leaving the marketplace with his nostrils still full of rich fragrances when he saw Ibni the Babylonian emerging from a wine shop just ahead of him. In a panic as sudden as it was unreasoned, Ranefer wheeled into an alley and crouched there, trembling, until the Babylonian was certain to be gone. Even then he dared not venture onto the big streets, but found his way back to the gold house furtively, through the alleys, like one hiding from pursuers. "Why? Why?" he kept asking himself angrily. "I've nothing to fear from him. He cannot possibly know it was I who told Rek. Indeed, it was not I who told Rek. For all Ibni knows, no one told Rek at all. He merely discovered it." The rapture was gone from the day, nevertheless. Ibni was here and alive in the city of the dead, whereas Ranefer had somehow been thinking of him as simply gone, like a puff of smoke. Gebu was still here and alive, too, very much so, and the aftermath of Ibni's dismissal was still to come. Ibni would certainly report to Gebu, if he had not already done so, and would Gebu ever believe Ranefer had nothing to do with it? He dawdled on the way home, fighting off wave after wave of dread. When he reached the street of the Crooked Dog, he found the gate of Gebu's house open. Torchlight flickered within the courtyard, and there was a mumble of voices. Slowly, on feet that wanted badly to run the other way, Ranefer walked into the courtyard. The voices belonged to Ibni and Gebu. They stood together in the middle of the paved space, and Gebu held a torch. He extended it and squinted through its light at Ranefer, but merely grunted without interest when he saw who it was and turned back to Ibni.
"Nay, nay, you have served me well enough, but you're no use to me now. Can you not see that? You must find some other master."
"Some other? But how will I live? You promised me."
"I promised you nothing. Come now, be off with you."
Gebu started toward the gate, but Ibni clung to his arm and continued his panic-stricken whine.
"You did, aye, you did indeed, at the wine shop that night when we struck our bargain. You said..."
"I said nothing I remember. Be off."
Gebu brushed him away with a careless gesture that nevertheless sent him sprawling and strode on past Ranefer to the gate, where he looked this way and that along the street, holding his torch high.
"Ask the boy,"
Ibni cried, apparently catching sight of Ranefer for the first time.
"Here's the young one. Ask him."
He scrambled to his feet and darted over to Ranefer with his most obsequious smile and the hateful hand-rubbing.
"You'll help old Ibni, won't you? I'll wager you missed me today and wondered where I was. Well, I've been turned off. I've been accused unfairly of someone else's evil-doing. Can I help that? I'm the soul of honor, always have been. I trust people's promises. Tell your honored brother how he promised me a copper a day for life if I would serve him at the gold shop.
I know nothing about it, Ronefer muttered. Brushing past the Babylonian in his turn, he walked quickly to the storeroom and went inside. There he stood in the darkness, clinging to the gritty edge of a shelf and breathing fast with joy. He could scarcely believe his luck. Obviously, all was well at last. All was better than he had dared hope. Neither Ibni nor Gebu suspected him of any connection with the affair. Gebu was not in a rage. Incredibly, he did not even seem much interested. How could that be? After all the rages and beatings concerning those cursed wineskins. Still, thought Ronefer, the last time I brought the wineskin, he did not seem much interested either. He said to Wenamun, It is of small importance now. Why just then? Nothing had changed that day that Ronefer could remember, except that Gebu's mood had suddenly altered, as it often did, and food had become more plentiful since. He gave it up. What mattered was that Gebu was not interested. He was waiting for someone, no doubt Wenamun or that Nile boat captain, and his mind was on something else. Ronefer prayed to Amun that it might stay there. Groping along the shelf, he found half a bread loaf and several onions. He ate them quickly while the voices went on outside, then dipped a mug of water and drank deep. A sudden roar of anger brought him to the doorway. Gebu had come to the end of his patience with Ibni's whining.
Tie that tongue of yours in a basket and throw it in the Nile, he bellowed. You'll get nothing more from me. Get out and don't come back.
He gave the Babylonian a push that sent him careening out of the gate and into the arms of Wenamun, who was just coming in. Wenamun dropped his unexpected burden, sidestepped disdainfully, and entered the courtyard.
Ah, here you are, Gebu grunted.
Ibni, picking himself up, was shrilling venomously.
Very well, very well. We'll see how you fare without me. You'll get no one else to do your bidding at Wreck the Goldsmith's. That boy won't. No use to ask him.
Gebu closed the gate in his face. Him and his paltry wineskins. There are far bigger birds in the air than Wreck the Goldsmith, eh, my friend? He grinned at Wenamun in a slow, sly way that made Ronefer suddenly uneasy, much as he enjoyed seeing the last of Ibni. Deciding abruptly that what he wished now was the obscurity of his corner, he started for the acacia tree. Gebu's voice stopped him.
You, Ronefer, I'm going out. If any should ask for me, send them to Mutra's wine shop.
Gebu turned away, then turned back.
About tomorrow, you're finished at Rex. Come to the stone-cutting shop at first light in the morning. You're apprenticed to me now.
Again he turned to go, leaving Ronefer too stunned at first to move or even speak. Gebu was at the gate before he found his voice.
Wait, Gebu, wait!
Well? Gebu grunted, turning.
Please, what did you say just now?
I said come to the stone-cutting shop at first light tomorrow. You will start your apprenticeship.
But you cannot mean that. You cannot mean...
I mean what I say, as always, Gebu said, walking on again.
Ronefer rushed after him and caught his sleeve.
Do you mean I cannot go back to Rex? Not ever? Oh, please.
Sst! Leave off that yowling.
But please, oh, please do not make me leave gold working. I do not want to be a stone cutter. I...
Silence! Get out of the way.
But why are you doing this? Why? I have done nothing.
Gebu glanced at him impatiently.
Did you not hear the Babylonian? It is all over at the goldsmith's. I told you before, I must have some use of you.
But I earn Deben at Rex, and I bring them all home. Wait, listen to me, please. Let me go to the gold house tomorrow. Only tomorrow. Rex will expect me. He does not know.
I sent word to him an hour ago. Out of my way now. Come, friend, we are late.
Pushing Ranefer aside, Gebu opened the gate and raised his torch for Wenamun to pass through.
Nay, please, please let me go tomorrow. Only one more day. I was to make little golden leaves tomorrow.
The gate slammed. The torchlight was cut off by the wall. Ranefer dropped to his knees on the pavement and burst into sobs. Later, when the moon had climbed high over the courtyard wall, Gebu came home again. Ranefer was waiting for him, huddled deep in the shadow of the acacia tree. He had rehearsed many times every word he was going to say. Now the time had come. As Gebu bolted the gate behind him and started for the stairs, Ranefer came out of the shadows under the acacia tree and walked across the moonlit pavement toward him.
"Hey, Mother of Night, what is that?"
Gebu gasped and fell back a few paces, then straightened himself in anger.
"It is you, worthless one. Curse you, what do you mean coming upon me like that? I thought you were a keft."
"Gebu, I want to talk to you. Please listen."
"Well? Well, make haste. I'm tired. I want my mat."
It is about the apprenticeship."
Ranefer stopped to swallow.
"You will begin it tomorrow, and that is all I have to say about the apprenticeship. Do not waste your breath arguing."
"Nay, I will not. I do not mean to argue. I mean to tell you of a plan I have, one that will please you,"
Ranefer added quickly. Gebu grunted skeptically, but waited.
"You took me when my father went to the gods," began Ranefer carefully, "out of the—"
he swallowed, but forced it out.
"Out of the goodness of your heart. I, a gutter waif. If you had not offered me food and lodging, I would be sleeping in the dust of the streets and fighting the dogs for their leavings. Instead, I live comfortably on your bread, and you found me work to my liking and did not apprentice me to a fishmonger or yourself until now. I am a burden to you, a great burden. You have said so many times, have you not, Gebu?"
Ranefer cried, forgetting his speech for a moment in his emotion.
"Is it not true, all I have said?"
"Go on," Gebu said.
Again Ranefer swallowed, a great gulp to give him courage, then poured out the rest in a torrent for fear he would not get it out at all.
"Therefore, I wish to take away the burden of myself. I will leave you and not live on your bread or sleep in your courtyard. Instead, I will build myself a little house in the desert out of bricks that I shall make myself, and I will cut papyrus in the marsh and sell it to the sailmakers and buy my own bread and fish, and you will not need to trouble about me ever again, any longer. And I can do this, all this, and never again be a burden to you, if only you will buy me a donkey, just one very small donkey to carry the papyrus to the sailmakers. It need not be a young donkey, just an old one. I can give you coppers for it when I earn them, and—"
He stopped, because Gebu was laughing, at first softly in little bursts, then louder, then in great gales, first doubling over and then leaning far back with his chin tipped to the sky, until the courtyard rang with it and the neighbor across the wall flung back his lattice and began to curse at the noise. Still laughing, even staggering with the force of his laughter, Gebu moved on toward the stairway and up the steps to his room, leaving Ranefer standing silent in the moonlight. When the door of the upstairs room had creaked shut on its leather hinges and the laughter had at last died away, Ranefer turned and walked slowly back to the acacia tree. This plan had not succeeded. He had not really, in his heart, ever thought it would.
Chapter 6.
There was nothing whatever to do but go to the stone-cutting shop next morning, and Ranefer went. Numbly he walked down familiar streets, past the papyrus marsh, past the beginning of the wharfs. Then, with a longing glance ahead at the corner where he had always turned to go to Rex, he turned unwillingly, traitorously, he felt, into a different street, walked past different shops and laboratories and warehouses, and stopped at last before the long, open shed that was Gebu's stone-cutting shop. He had been here only once or twice, and each time he had left the place as soon as he could. The whole street rang with the harsh clamor that issued from it, the clatter of chisel on stone, hammer on chisel, granite shrieking against rough granite. It was as different from the music of the little gold hammers as anything could be. Under the low, palm-thatched roof, he could see stone-dusted figures moving about among the great blocks and slabs of stone that stood here and there upon the cluttered dirt floor. One of these figures would be Pa'i, the foreman, to whom he must present himself. At this season, Gebu was seldom in the shop. He and the greater part of his men were across the river, working on Pharaoh's new addition to the great temple, shaping and fitting stones as they were needed for the walls. Here in the shop, only great sarcophagi were built, and blocks of stone rough-hewn to size, ready for the sculptors. The sculptors themselves worked elsewhere, in their own workshops. No carving was done here. No huge image of the gods or pharaoh emerged gradually, majestically, from some rough block. No lotus or twining marsh flower traced itself slowly upon an alabaster vase. No little ducks and vultures and baskets, all spelling words, appeared upon a slab under the skillful chisel of an artist. If Gebu had been a sculptor, Ranefer thought, then, at least, I could have learned to make something beautiful, if not of gold, then of stone. It would have been something worth learning. There was no use struggling. The gods and Gebu had decreed that he learn this instead, mere cutting and hacking to make the stone ready for others. He sighed and crossed the street to the shop. Hesitating under the straggling fringe of palm fronds, he peered into the shop's interior, which seemed in deep gloom after the blaze of sun in the road. There were a dozen men moving here and there about their task, but no one took the slightest notice of him. Near where he stood, an old man squatted on his haunches beside a great slab of alabaster, examining and blowing at a small hollow in one corner of it. As Ranefer watched, he rose and hobbled to the next corner of the slab, sprinkled black sand from a box upon a chalk mark on the stone, set the bit of a hand drill on the spot, and began to bore another hollow. His face looked patient, worn, and kindly, and Ranefer, hoping the man was Pa'i, the foreman, approached him. "I beg pardon, master," he said hesitantly. The old man went on drilling, slapping the stone weights around and around with one gnarled hand while holding the handle of the spindle with the other. Ranefer raised his voice above the surrounding noises and touched the old man on the shoulder as he spoke. "I beg pardon, master." At his touch, the driller jumped and halted the circling stones, then looked around. He seemed surprised to see Ranefer. "Eh? I thought you were the foreman, come to tell me I am doing it all wrong again. What do you want of me, little one?" Obviously, this man could not be Pa'i. "I am looking for the foreman," Ranefer said. "Eh? You'll have to shout, this noise. I am looking for the foreman, please," Ranefer shouted. "Ah, the foreman. That would be Pa'i, young one. The skinny little man yonder. Don't say I called him that, in the far corner, beside the finishers. What do you want of him? I warn you, do not bother him with trifles. His temper is as short as my thumb." The old man held up his right thumb, which Ranefer saw with a shock was hacked off at the first knuckle. "Aye, the wedge slipped, when we were splitting a block of granite 20 years ago," said the old man with a sidewise grin. "And here," he tucked the handle of the drill under his arm and held up the other hand, "the chisel went awry one time, and here a hammer crushed my fingertip instead of the sandstone. They are stonecutter's hands, not pretty, nay, not pretty at all, but still fairly useful, praise be to the gods. What do you want of Pa'i, young one?" I am to report to him, Ranefer answered. He could not take his horrified gaze off the old man's mutilated hands. I am the new apprentice.
Ah, well, that's a necessary errand. Go and speak to him, but be sure you shout. He hates nothing so much as people who mumble.
I will. Thank you, master.
Zahotep. That is my name. Only Zahotep, under craftsman. Run along with you now. I must drill these sockets, or Pa'i will have my tongue out for wagging so long.
Zahotep turned back to his drill, and Ranefer started down the length of the shop, his bare feet cringing away from the dirty carpet of stone chips that covered the dirt floor.
Suppose my hands become like that, he was thinking. Why, I could never work with gold again. I could never handle the little tweezers, or solder a delicate joint, or shape the little gold leaves. I would be good for nothing but rough work. I could never learn skill in anything.
He circled a large block of some dark green stone, upon which two men knelt facing each other, scrubbing the surface with a block of sandstone. Their bodies worked rhythmically back and forth, and the sandstones produced a series of harsh, grating screeches that caused icy trickles to run down Ranefer's spine and set his teeth to aching. He dared not look at their hands. Beyond him, in the farthest corner, three men worked around a great sarcophagus of pink granite, one stretching a red-chalked string across its side, the others chipping off the high spots where the string touched and the chalk rubbed off. A man stood surveying these works, his thin arms akimbo and his fists, one of each grasped an authoritative-looking stick, propped on his skinny hips. He was scarcely taller than Ranefer, but he looked as if he were made of twisted wire. Swallowing, Ranefer moved reluctantly to his side and spoke up loudly.
I beg your pardon, Master Foreman.
I, what? Who are you?
Snapped Pa'i, turning his head and thrusting it toward Ranefer all in one rapid motion.
I am Ranefer, the new apprentice. Gebu bade me find you and—
Gebu? You will call him Master here, if you please. So you are the young brother.
Half-brother,
Ranefer muttered rebelliously. Pa'i either failed to hear or chose to ignore the correction. He was looking with disdain at Ranefer's thin shoulders and arms. He seemed even to be counting his ribs.
He sends me these creatures, then expects me to make something of them, he remarked to no one in particular. Stonecutter, this one's more fit to become a rat catcher or a twiner of flower wreaths. Well, come along, come along.
Burning with resentment and humiliation, Ranefer hurried after him toward the front of the shop. Pa'i moved with quick, jerky, impatient strides, swinging his stick, thrusting his head this way and that toward the workers he passed, like a long-necked bird of prey. He led Ranefer straight back to Zahotep and the drill and pointed to the box of black sand near the alabaster slab.
That is cutting sand, he shouted. Put a little into the hole each time Zahotep raises the drill, that the bit may cut deeply. When the sockets are finished, I will set you another task.
He spun around and went off down the room with his jerky gait before Ranefer could do more than nod. Glancing at Zahotep inquiringly, Ranefer picked up the box of sand and squatted near the newly begun socket. Instantly, the old man stopped the drill.
Young one, stand up, or else squat yonder at the other side, unless you wish your eyes put out. The sand flies and it will cut flesh as well as stone.
Ranefer recoiled so hastily that he stumbled and all but dropped the box.
There, now you've spilled some. Don't let Pa'i see it. Scrape it up with your fingers. Now put a pinch into the hole. That is not ordinary sand, you know, to be spilled and scattered. It is cutting sand, harder than the hardest stone it is. Aye, that's enough for the moment. Now stand back.
Zahotep set the drill twirling again to the gritty, grating rasp of sand against stone, while Ranefer stood well aside, his teeth on edge, and looked disconsolately at the great inert slab which could cost a man his thumb, his skill, or his eyesight as the price of his labor on it. What was being fashioned of it anyway? The next time the drill stopped, he asked Zahotep.
Why, this is the lid of the outer coffin of Pharaoh's fan-bearer, young one. Do you see yonder where the finishers are working? That is the coffin itself. Aye, a grand one it will be, the finest pink granite with this alabaster lid. I understand his high lordship has ordered 2 inner coffins also. One of acacia wood, finely joined, all painted and gilded, and the other, the innermost, of cedar wood, with his portrait in solid gold set into the lid. Hi, he will go to his tomb in style, that great one. Put in the sand, boy, a pinch only, that's enough.
His portrait in solid gold, Ranefer thought as he watched the old man's scarred hand slap the stone weights of the spindle around and around. How wonderful it would be to make such a thing. One would fashion it by raising, like a bowl, like a series of little bowls all joined together. And of strange shapes, one like the nose, one like the curve of the cheek, one like the chin, the mouth. What stakes would I use to shape a mouth in gold? Just the edge of Rex's smallest one, perhaps, using the smallest of hammers. The noises of the shop faded, and Ranefer stood alone before a line of shaping stakes, moving from one to the other as he tapped out the full curve of a forehead, the clean line of a jaw, the subtle modeling of an upper lip, choosing one and then another little hammer from the rack before him. His mind had paused in puzzled frustration at the golden corner of an eye when Zahotep's touch on his shoulder brought him with a start out of his daydreaming.
The sand, young one, the sand!
As Ranefer hastily knelt to the box, the old man darted a glance about the shop.
Aye, Pa'i was not looking that time, but beware of idleness and dreaming, young one. Never think he is not keeping his hawk eye on you. It is everywhere at once, that eye, and if it sees you idling, you'll soon find out why he carries that stick.
I will not dream any more, Zahotep. Ranefer kept to his word, but it was difficult. His task was so small, so monotonous, and so utterly lacking in interest that he found it almost impossible to keep even part of his mind on it. A pinch of sand, a long, dull wait, another pinch of sand. He spent what seemed an interminable time watching the hollows slowly form in the 4 corners of the coffin lid. His eyes glazed from staring at the whirling drill, his ears bombarded with the harsh noises of the shop.
What are the hollows for?
He asked Zahotep at last, more to fight inattention than because he wanted to know.
Why, they are the sockets for the pins to fit into, the old man said.
He pointed down the shop to the coffin lid.
Do you see those bosses at the top edge of the coffin? One in each corner. When the lid is in place, they will fit just so into our sockets, young one, and make the lid fast. It would be too hard to have a lid slipping and sliding when they carry his high lordship down into his tomb.
Privately, Ranefer wished lid, coffin, and lordship in the tomb already, but he refrained from saying so. Wisely, it turned out, for as he dropped a last pinch of sand into the 4th socket and stood back, he found Pa'i at his elbow.
Finished here, eh? Come along, then. Zahotep has no more need of you. Hurry, hurry, don't lag behind. I'm a busy man. This way. There's a block of granite yonder ready for the smoothing, and I want it out of here by tomorrow. Nebre!
The last word was uttered in a roar so thunderous that Ranefer stopped in his tracks, wondering confusedly if it were some order he was supposed to understand and obey. Instantly, Pa'i's stick was beating a tattoo about his ankles. With an irritable, "Don't lag, don't lag!" the foreman strode on again. Ranefer followed hastily. He realized now that the shout had been merely a summons to someone named Nebre, for a gangling figure was hurrying toward them from another part of the shop. Pa'i stopped before a block of granite and pointed a bony figure at it just as the newcomer arrived. He was a boy, obviously another apprentice. He was a year or two older than Ronefer, and a full head taller, with a stolid, sullen face. Pa'i gave them rectangular chunks of sandstone and a few barked-out orders. A moment later, Ronefer found himself kneeling on the granite block face-to-face with Nebre, scrubbing back and forth with his sandstone as he had seen the two men doing earlier, and producing the same rasping shrieks from the granite surface. Pa'i watched them a moment, mouth tight and eyes suspicious, but evidently he found nothing to criticize, for he turned suddenly and strode away. As soon as he was gone, Ranefer glanced at his companion and ventured a sideways smile. "A horrid noise this makes," he said. Nebre looked at him blankly and briefly. He said nothing. Ranefer's heart sank, but he tried once more. "Have you been here long?" Again, Nebre raised blank, indifferent eyes. "Been here?" he repeated. "As an apprentice. Have you worked long at the shop?" Nebre stared a moment, still scrubbing the sandstone back and forth. "Aye," he said finally. His eyes went back to his work. Ronefer gave up. The longer he knelt there, scrubbing away tediously with his glum companion, the more he desired to raise his chunk of sandstone and bring it down with a crack on Nebre's head. When he thought of Hecate, he could scarcely keep the tears from his eyes. During the next few days, Ranefer learned many things about the stonecutter's trade. He learned that sandstoning was even more monotonous than sanding the drill, and far more fatiguing. He learned that rough dressing stone with chisel and hammer, to which he was introduced his third day, was the most fatiguing of all, and while it was slightly less boring, it was much more dangerous than either of the other two tasks. He learned that when he grew tired, he made mistakes, and when he made mistakes, Pa'i pounced like the leopard of Upper Egypt, raining curses and blows indiscriminately upon his already aching back. He learned through fear to keep his mind every instant upon his work, not only because of Pa'i's wrath, but because of the painful scrapes and gouges inflicted on his hands by the slightest inattention. With the vision of Zahotep's mutilated hands floating always before his eyes like some evil prophecy, his shoulders and thin arms numb or afire from the unaccustomed labor, and his mind in a prison of monotony, he learned above all to hate the stonecutter's trade with a passion which matched, in intensity, his love for the goldsmiths. Gebu came once each day to the shop, sometimes at mid-morning, usually at the hour of noon when all work ceased for a time, and a blessed silence descended on the shop. During this respite, some of the men ate food they had brought from their homes. Others sprawled on the gritty floor to talk or snatch a few moments' sleep. Old Zahotep and the two finishers always walked to the wine shop on the corner and drank their refreshment. Ronefer had no food to bring, no coppers to buy wine, no companion to talk to, and during his first few days he was too tired and sore to sleep or even rest. He merely sat exhausted on a block of stone and watched dully while Gebu conferred with Pa'i or strode about examining the progress of the work. Sometimes Gebu went to a little storeroom at the rear of the shop and took out ragged rolls of papyrus or coarse linen, selected one, and growled orders to Pa'i as he showed it to him. Sometimes he brought a new one to add to the store. Often he took men with him when he left, and sent others back from the temple site to take their places, so there was a continual change of workmen in all the shop, and Ranefer gave up trying to remember them all. Occasionally, Wenamun came with Gebu, and they would pore over some linen scroll together. When this happened, Ranefer turned away and made himself as inconspicuous as possible, feeling the usual chill run up his spine at the sight of the lank, stoop-shouldered figure, muffled from head to foot in a cloak that made him look like a molting vulture. Wenamun, with his silent cat's feet and queerly bright eyes. However, neither Wenamun nor Gebu ever took the slightest notice of him. Even at home, Gebu seemed to have all but forgotten his young half-brother's existence. He kicked Ranefer awake each morning on his way out of the courtyard, tossed him a copper to buy bread, or jerked his thumb toward the storeroom to indicate that there was food laid out. Each evening, he appropriated the boy's scanty wages doled out by Pai at the close of every long day. The rest of the time, aside from a few furious cuffings to vent an ill humor or mocking taunts to enhance a good one, he ignored Ranefer completely. Ranefer was glad enough to return the favor. "At least I am not stealing for him anymore," he often told himself as he lay on his ragged mat at night, watching the moon float high and tangle itself in the branches of the acacia tree. "Someday, please, Amun, I will grow as big as he, and then I will free myself of him somehow and go back to goldworking, and then I will never, never, never look at another block of granite in my life." Meanwhile, he looked at them day after day. His muscles were slow to harden to the rough demands of this sort of labor, and as long as they were taxed beyond their strength each day, their soreness and throbbing disturbed his rest each night and filled his sleep with fitful dreams. One night it was not his own aching body, but a certain sound that roused him in the night. Quickly he raised up on his elbow. Surely he had heard the thin squeak of the leather hinges on Gebu's bedroom door. Commonplace enough by day, in the depths of night, the sound was strange and unnatural. He listened with beating heart, thinking that Gebu was coming to punish him for some error, and expecting every second to hear his step on the stair. He never heard the step. After a long silence, he lay back, puzzled. Had he been mistaken? Or maybe, instead of coming out of his room, Gebu had just gone in. But why? From where? Surely it was later than he usually came home from the riverside wine shops. Indeed, he had come home from there once already tonight, much earlier in the evening. If the hinges had squeaked just now, he must have been returning from a second trip. And this time, instead of slamming the gate and stumping noisily across the courtyard as usual, he had slipped as silently as his bulk would allow up the stairs and into his room. There had even been a furtive sound about the way the hinge squeaked, as if he were cautiously easing it shut, as if he did not want even Ranefer to know he had been gone. Queer, Ranefer thought as he lay down to sleep again, shivering. Queer and awful. During these hours, kefts and mysteries possessed the world. Everyone knew that. The baas of the dead fluttered out of their tombs and across the dark face of Egypt, revisiting the places they had known in life. The malevolent spirits of the unburied roamed at will, seeking mischief they could do. The even more fearful beings, like the woman with her head on backward, snatched away any children whose mothers had not bound amulets about their wrists and said the night spell over them before they slept. Surely no errand was urgent enough to draw Gebu out into all that. Then what was the noise? Something in his thoughts had stirred an elusive memory in Ranefer's mind. Finally, he captured it. The night before that day he had brought home the last wineskin from the gold house, he had heard this same tiny sound. Next morning, filled with his plan, he had believed it was the fluttering wings of his father's baa that had half-waked him. Had the baa come back again tonight, then? He tried to believe it, but it was difficult. Perhaps he had heard only the squeak of hinges that other night, too, and the baa had never come at all. Certainly, he had not had much help from it. True, he had waked with the plan the next morning, and the plan had worked, but look at the disaster that had followed. Still, he told himself hastily, Father could not have known that would happen. He tried to help me. He did help me. The rest was Gebu's fault, not his. No doubt he has come back to help me again. No doubt I shall wake in the morning with another plan, Next morning, however, all was the same. No marvel had occurred. No plan or even hope had come. A week or so later, he was wakened by the same stealthy squeak. There was no mistaking the sound of the hinges.